Live from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
Hey there, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara Sharinian.
And my name is Rich. No last name.
Rich, who goes by the last name. And Alon should be here on the phone live remotely from Vegas. Alon, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Fantastic. You're coming in loud and clear.
I can hear you.
Excellent.
So we've got you know, at first I was like, oh, you know what? I don't know what we're going to talk about on this show. But then we started talking about 5 seconds before the show, we realized, wow, you know, we really have a lot to talk about on this show.
Well, so, fantastic. I don't even have to be here.
That's right. And
you could just leave now, actually, and we'll be fine.
No. But we like to keep Alon on because we like to talk to him and all that other stuff. Anyway.
I get so paid.
And yeah, and that stuff. Now, you want to tell us what you're doing so far away in Las Vegas? I mean, are you...
I'm a tree hugger. I don't know if those listeners know that, but I was interested in buying a new car. I've talked about how I wanted to buy a new car. Nobody called in and got me a sweet dealer who would give me a good deal.
So you said, I'm going to get rich quick and get an Aston Martin instead.
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't. Sorry. But I did travel to Vegas in order to buy myself a car because I found a good private sale on a car in Vegas. Unfortunately, didn't get all the paperwork done in just one day, which would have been a feat in and of itself. But anyway, so I'm stuck here for another day, and I will drive back home tomorrow with my shiny, brand-new-to-me car. So that'll be good times. But that's why I'm here now. But luckily, I've got a wonderful place to stay. I'm actually staying with a listener of the show. Yeah, can you believe that?
As we all are.
Is he listening right now?
He's actually playing Metroid Prime 3 Corruption, which something you want to talk about on today's show.
Lame.
Yeah. So before we get going, I just want to run down all the games that we want to try to talk about this show and all the topics, and we'll see if we can make it. But there's a lot of games. Odin Sphere we never got to talking about, so there's that. I played a really cool game called Kororinpa Marble Mania, which is a total sleeper on the Wii. We've got Skate. We've got Heavenly Sword. We've got Metroid Prime 3. Rich has a few choice words to say about something about Gears of War.
I do.
We've got a lot of hit virtual console titles on the Wii came out this week, like Donkey Kong Jr. Math. I know how excited everybody is about
that. I
can't wait. And we got
Jr. Math?
Donkey Kong Jr. Math. Yeah. I can't
believe... That was one of the games we got on our server for the Family Feud game.
I can't believe you haven't downloaded it yet, Alon. What's wrong with you?
Well, I don't have access to my Wii over here.
There's no excuse.
Yeah, how much
Kong
does that
Jr.
cost?
Math.
$5? $10? More than it's been worth since the creation of the game originally.
All right, so that's really cool. What else we got? There's also a salary survey, which has been done every year by the...
People.
Who is it? The people who do the Game Developer Magazine. That came out, so I want to talk about that at some point later on in the show.
So does that just cement the fact in your brain that you don't get paid enough?
Actually, I was a little pleased to read the results
really?
Of this. Yeah, I have to admit I was. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But I know you guys had a bunch of PAX stuff to talk about that you never got around to, so let's start with that.
Dude, let me start off by saying this. PAX, people were asking why aren't the old shows up yet and why isn't the PAX Chatterbox Treasure Box audio up yet?
The answer is Alon is not a robot. Here to amuse you guys.
I really wanted to put up, but I said to myself, I promised to myself, I've been working all August getting the game shows ready, and then I especially worked hard the week before, and I was going to take a vacation from my vacation. So I took a week of not getting up extra shows and stuff, which is not like me. I like to be very consistent. But, I mean, we did get last week's show up on time, but there's two pieces of audio that will show up this week when I get around to the Chatterbox Treasure Box show. And the show that you guys did when I was away in New Hampshire. And I think, Rich, were you on the phone that time, too? Or no, you were actually in studio 2 weeks ago.
I have no idea. I probably was.
It's all a blur.
That was way too long ago to remember.
So, you know,
so anyway, I've had all these vacations, and this is important for me to mention. I put up on our front page right now in our news flash area. I also, last month, made a video for some contest involving Best Western where you make a video, and they send you away on a vacation. And so I have to plug that. I need people to go to our site, find the link, and then vote for me so that I can do that, because I need another vacation from the vacation I took of my vacation.
Did you actually win something from that, or what?
Yeah. No, I could. I could win, like, some big vacation.
But did you win?
Like a really nice camera and a trip away for like a week or something. Honestly, I wouldn't do stuff like this, but my friend worked at Best Western. He's like, dude, like, nobody's entered this contest. Just make a video and you'll pretty much win. So I did that, and then since nobody entered, they gave it another month.
This is truly the next level of viral marketing.
That's what it is.
It's like, it's not really like fake blogs. It's people saying, come on, just enter. No one else is entering. You got to do it.
That's what happened. And now, well, listen, it's like, you know, nationwide and only like 30 people entered. So, so listen, go to our website, click on it and vote for me, because that'll be one more week of me not being on the air, because I'll be on vacation.
All right. That can be found on chatterboxers.com.
Yep. Chatterbox Game Show and chatterboxers.com.
All right.
And 12 other URLs that I don't know.
Okay, so on to PAX.
PAX.
All right. Now, Rich says there's a million things he wants to talk about. The biggest thing that happened at PAX, aside from our Family Feud event and the Chatterbox Treasure Box, was that U-Bowl or UA Bowl or Iwu Bowl or whatever the hell his name
Uwe
is.
Bowl.
Yeah, I don't care. We totally didn't mention this to Ara last week, and I knew he wouldn't have known otherwise. This bowl guy totally showed up on stage right after the keynote speech from Will Wheaton, which was interesting. But
Will Wheaton was awesome.
He was awesome, although quite contrived, in my opinion.
Awesome.
Anyway, then Bowl came out on stage. He showed the trailer to Postal and just took a bunch of questions from the audience. And, like, some chick get all pissed off. And she said, what the hell was with that racist video expletive? Get the hell off the stage. And she just stole the mic from the first guy in line so she could yell at him. It was awesome. And then, unfortunately, I had to leave to go get ready for Chatterbox Treasure Box, which was happening really soon afterwards.
What did Mr. Bull do in response to this heckler?
He was actually really calm. He was chill. He was just like, you know, obviously some people don't quite understand that, you know, there's parody and there's humor. And I got to tell you, the trailer to Postal, I assume it's on the internet if you want to see it, it was really funny. Like, the movie's obviously going to be horrible in terms of, like, quality movie-going experience, but it actually looked really funny. The whole opening scene of, like, two Arab guys in an airplane just talking about the number of virgins they're going to get and then getting upset and calling Osama, and they were like, wait a minute, I'm not getting 71 virgins? What is it? He told me I could get 99, and they call up Osama, and they're like, Osama, listen, how many virgins can you guarantee me in, you know, when we go to whatever? And he's like, I can't guarantee more than 20 for the both of you total. And it was just...
See, this is what I don't understand.
That sounds terrible.
I mean, for me, it's like, it's about quality, not quantity. I mean, what do these virgins look like? That should be the first thing on their minds.
But apparently that's not their concern. They're like, how long did 20 virgins last you? What? A year? 10 months? That was funny. Again, it's going to be a useless movie, but they actually have some people you'll recognize in the movie, too. I don't know their names.
Yes.
But
they have the bully from The Christmas Story is one of the actors. I know that.
And if that doesn't make you angry, you're not paying attention.
And everybody knows who I'm talking about.
So anyway, I just thought it was funny, and it was sort of in place of the Jack Thompson that was supposed to show up, but, you know, Jack went and screwed that up. And it was really ballsy of him to come out on stage and just be there and take everybody's beatings.
I'm actually, you know what? I'm becoming more and more of a fan of this guy. At first, I thought it was a joke, but he seems to conduct himself so well in the face of just, incredible S-storms.
People that hate him?
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. He's so good at it.
I admire that.
I was just about to compare him to, like, the retarded kid who gets to show off in front of the school, but everyone knows he sucks, but, like, since he's retarded, they let him go ahead.
Yeah.
And they all clap and stuff. The problem is that since he's not retarded and he's allowed to make movies for the mainstream, we still hate him. Like, he should get it. Even though he doesn't.
All right, well, we got to go for a break, but we'll hear more about UA Bowl and PAX when we come back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara Sharinian.
My name is Rich.
And we've got Alon here remotely live from Vegas. You there, Alon?
I am.
All right. We've got a little bit of housekeeping to do real quick. You wanted to do the honors, Alon?
Yeah, I got to remind everybody to go to uat.edu. That's the website for the University of Advancing Technology. How's it looking today, Rich?
The dorms aren't done yet.
But they're coming soon? Wait, weren't they supposed to be done for
this semester? Technically done. Like, everybody's moved into the dorms, but they're still, like, finishing it. It's, I don't know, it's kind of ridiculous, actually.
Can we take a second to discuss the meaning of the word technically? How technically means really, actually?
Well, like, the front area isn't all, like, the sidewalk isn't completely finished connecting to the rest of the stuff, and, like, part of the parking lot still isn't done, and...
I mean, people actually live there, though.
Yeah, people are all moved in and whatnot, so I think it'll be another...
When you've got technology, you know, other things, they're not as important.
Yeah, it'll be another couple weeks, and I think it'll all be cleaned up, so...
All right, so we actually have a call, a long-distance call from Alberta. TJ, are you on... there, TJ?
Hello.
Yes, TJ, you're on the air.
Hey, I just wanted to call, like, ask about... Or not ask, I guess, but say, like... Why do I have to choose who reviews my games? Like, why does the one FPS guy do all the FPSs? Because I don't know about you guys, but I don't play just FPSs.
Oh, so you're getting pissed off that, like, the same guy from, like, a magazine or whatever who will review a certain type of game, like, always reviews those types of games all the time?
Well, no, it's like he goes from what he's previously played, and if something's not as good as, like, oh, he could be like, oh, I like Bioshock. Oh, this game isn't as good as Bioshock. It gets less. Whereas I could be like, oh, I didn't really like Bioshock, but I like this game a lot more.
Right. So what bothers you about that?
Well, a lot of it's just way too opinionated.
Isn't that the point of reviews?
Well,
Rich, valid
point. Is this
one
guy going to be everybody that plays the game, though? Or like a vast majority of the people that play the game?
Well, TJ brings up an interesting point here, because on the one hand, you could say, like, okay, well, you know what? Like, Rich, I mean, you're right, right? It's like, you can say, okay, well, you know, this is just a review, and this is just my opinion, and so, you know, there's really no way to critique it if you have, you know, that frame of mind. But, you know, on the other hand, I think that the point that TJ is trying to make is that, you know, when you're reviewing something for, you know, like a, you know, some kind of media outlet, right, it is sometimes more beneficial to present a kind of, you know, viewpoint that's more objective rather than, you know, based on your whimsy. And it's a big problem, I think, in the press in general, because most of them, I think, are playing to their whimsy, and they all sit behind this shield of, you know, either A, oh, it's my opinion, and therefore nothing, you can't criticize me, I'm beyond reproach, or B, oh, it's entertainment, and therefore once again, I'm beyond criticism. And both of those things I don't think are true.
I don't know how to respond to that. But...
So, I don't know. What do you think, TJ?
Well, I really think that they should have, like, at least a group of 10 people. But, like, I do realize there's places like IGN and there's games like there's GameSpot and all that. Like, there is other reviewing places. But if one person isn't going to review it right, it's just going to bring everybody else's up or down. Because if... Like, I know a lot of the little places, like Kotaku and, like, them, they don't get enough coverage, right?
Right.
Because they're kind of a
Kotaku
more objective
isn't little.
View of it.
But that's besides the point.
Hey, let's not...
Anyways, I'm being a jerk and interrupting.
No, that's a good point, too. I've always thought that, you know, EGM's style, or at least their original style...
Three
of
reviewers, two per game.
Four per game.
Four?
None of this, like, crap they do now, which is, like... Oh, we have a pool of, like, 14 reviewers, and, like, some will appear on some reviews, and some will appear on other reviews. The really cool thing, their original format, which I actually got from a Japanese magazine called Famitsu, they had four people review every single game, and it was the exact same.
That's a good system.
Exactly, the exact same four people. And the really cool thing that happened was that, you know, each of these four people had, you know, rather different personalities and likes and dislikes. And you could really gauge whether a game would suit you or not, not depending on the review, but based on the fact that you actually, over time, got an idea of what each person's biases were. So then, like, comparing them to each other, you'd have some kind of basis of, like, okay, well, you know, I like this guy's opinions usually, so, you know, if he likes this game, I'll like it, but that other guy, you know, stuff like that. But they don't do that too much anymore.
I know, the big sites have moved away from that a lot, and I think that's the opposite direction it needs to go. I mean, like, when you look at movie reviews, you go to, like, specific people's reviews. Like, Ebert is, not Ebert, Roper, I don't know, whoever. Like, there's famous movie reviewers, and, like, you know, if you share similar styles as certain reviewers, you know you're going to like that person's review. And in games, it's become very impersonal on the most part. Like, oh, GameSpot said this game is this good, or IGN. But, like, it's just a company that means nothing. Like, who in the company reviewed it? And I think if people start putting names out and it's specific people that are reviewing games, you know, it's going to be opinionated, but it'll be a lot more interpretable, because you'll either agree with that person's opinion or disagree based on prior reviews to other games.
Yeah, right. I think that, the person who's doing the reviewing, certainly, if you can relate to them, then the meaning of the review has a lot more value. And what, Ara, you were saying certainly carries true. And I remember the old days when I would read it and go, oh, well, the ninja guy or whatever likes these games, and I can relate to him. I respect his opinions. And maybe someone else feels more closely in line with a different reviewer, and that's fine. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I hadn't thought about it, so I don't really read magazines anymore. But I haven't seen a lot of that happen.
Well, who really does anyway?
Yeah, but maybe, do you think it's because all the review sites and stuff have gone to, like, to conglomerate corporate? I mean, when Penny Arcade, when Tycho says something, people pay attention. But it's always, I mean, it's him or Gabe, right?
Right, well, he's a marquee name.
Yeah, but he's also the same person every time.
Yeah.
So someone reads his post every single day, and they say, well, he said he really liked whatever game he liked, and I do as well. So it follows suit, whereas what we were talking about before, when you just read a review, a different person, one of 20 every time, it doesn't mean much to you anymore.
You got anything else for us, TJ?
Well, like, you guys are saying, like, you kind of get to know the reviewer, right? I don't think that's true. Like, if I'd rather not know who it is, I'd just rather have it say, like, John or, like, Steve or something, right? Then this way, like, I don't get attached to this reviewer or, like, dislike this reviewer because of what they've said.
Well, I mean, you know, we're not talking about, like, getting to know, like, you know, what their clothing style is or what they like to eat for breakfast. But, I mean, if you understand something about what their biases are, then you can kind of filter them out a lot more easily when you're trying to interpret what they're saying, right?
That's true. I've never looked at it that way. And I'm also supposed to ask about Alon's birthmark.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Oh, gosh. I didn't even know anything about that, so.
All right. Moving on. Thanks for the call.
All right. Thanks a lot, TJ. We really appreciate the call.
No problem.
Thank you for that phone call.
I think Alon appreciates it a little bit more than I do.
All right. So, yeah, the review thing, I mean, it's a question that a lot of people revisit, right? I think we kind of went off on a tangent, not really what TJ was going for. He wanted to say more, like, basically why the reviews become useless. You know, if we're going to live up to the standard of whatever game, Halo is the game, right? And nothing else can live up to it, then why even bother reviewing all the others? And can we find value in other games, right? Do we have to be such fanboys of one particular medium or one particular game or something that we can't have a valuable opinion on something else? But I mean, if really there's nothing else good out there, if nothing really does come close to meeting that standard, then it's valid, I think, because I don't want to play a game that's worse than a game I already have. It's got to bring something new to the table, which is what's so important with the emerging technologies and stuff of the Wii and all that stuff. We want new things. And if it's the same old stuff but crappier, then who wants it?
Well, I definitely don't want worse games than I already have.
Yeah, well, there you go. Too bad it happens all the time.
So Alon, now I heard that you've got a special Metroid Prime 3 report for us.
Well, I've been sitting here watching
John
Bono. I did. I only got a good 10 minutes in before the show actually started because I've been watching him play it all day. Rich, your main concern, like at PAX, you were like, you know what, this game sucks, the control is horrible. And am I right that that's holding true with you? You don't think?
Yeah, the controls just don't do it. I mean, I think it's Metroid Prime 3 was the game I was hoping for would show me why the Wii control is so good for first-person shooters, because everybody's been talking about it. And then I got my hands on it, and I was like, well, This is just like every other first-person shooter on the Wii, except it doesn't suck quite as much.
Now, wait a minute. Doesn't Metroid Prime 3 have the best first-person shooter controls ever made?
No.
No, but it says that on the box. How could that not be true?
It's a lie.
I need to go get a refund now.
I'll give a response myself when we come back.
All right, well, we'll be back in a minute, folks. Stay tuned.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's number one. Woohoo!
Welcome back, everyone. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. I'm your host, Ara Sharinian.
I'm Rich over here.
That's much better. Apparently, and we've got Alon.
My
you
microphone
there, Alon?
Fails.
I am here.
Fantastic. All right, so now we're ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, right before we went to break, Rich was talking about how
Metroid Prime 3 is bad.
Corruption and bad control. Yet I remember having a discussion with him saying that Metroid Prime 1 and 2 had good control. The irony here, of course, is that Metroid Prime 1 and 2 had bad control, and Metroid Prime 3 actually has very good control.
Yeah, see, Metroid Prime was a really good game, and it had really good controls for what the game was, and the Wii is the opposite of that.
Now, how can be the opposite? Because I played it for about 20 seconds, and it seemed clearly superior to me. How could that be? How is that possible?
It is much better. The control is really great. Now, Rich, I think you have a complaint where the trigger should be fire rather than jump.
Well, you can remap those buttons, I found out, in the game.
Yeah,
you
I thought that was a bit weird, actually.
So, that part is odd.
In my 20-second evaluation.
The biggest complaint I have is just the Wii functionality in general, like the pointer function of, you know, move left, right, up, and down. You tilt it slightly to the left or point it to the left a little bit, and so you turn left. But like when I play, and maybe it's just because I'm retarded and I'm used to playing games not on a Wii remote, but like when I'm playing a first person shooter, I'm holding the remote and I want to turn left, I want to move the remote left. Like I want to turn it, not like tip it a little to the side and move left. Like I want to turn, you know, like that's the whole point of it. Like you're supposed to get into this experience.
I don't know if your
LEDs were messed up or what, dude, but it works fine for me.
No, it's just because I turn it too far. Like there's a limited cone of where it can see the sensor bar, and I always turn it too far left and it doesn't see it anymore.
Oh, no, that answers the question.
And then the game freaks out.
Okay.
The game makes you want to do that. You're not going to sit there and be like, oh, let's move a little left. Oh, let's move a little right. When you're playing a first-person shooter, I want to move left, and I want to point left quickly.
Wait a second. When you're using a controller on a normal game, like let's say Xbox 360 game, you sit in your chair and turn 90 degrees to the left when you turn the stick?
No, but I hit the stick left as hard as possible, and then it stops me. And it's, okay, that's how far I can push the stick, and this is how fast I can move. There's physical limitations there. I go, move left quickly, and I'll jam it to the left hard and fast. That sounded terrible.
okay,
but
guys.
With the Wii Remote, there's no physical limitation, and when I'll turn left quick, and then the game just freaks out completely.
I agree with that complaint.
I think Rich
However, it's not something you can't get around.
I've played several different first-person shooters on the Wii for several hours, and I can't get used to it.
Well, I think I can understand Rich's lamentations, because I've always been surprised that almost every Wii game either offers highly minimal calibration or sensitivity adjustment with the interface, or none whatsoever. And I never really understood why they would leave out that type of functionality, because I'm sure that if they didn't, you know, people like Rich who have certain problems with the sensitivity in some cases, you know, would otherwise be able to kind of ameliorate that.
Well, there's a good example of the Wii controls. This dude basically modified the Wii to work on his PC, and was playing it with Halo 2, and he remapped all the functions, and it's not based on the pointer. It's based on the motion of the control, and, like, if you move the controller faster, then you turn faster in the game. And, like, that just makes so much sense to me, like, why a developer wouldn't possibly think of that. Like,
well, here's the thing. I think that, I mean, like, it seems obvious to you, and probably, you know, like, a different type of interface in that way would probably be much more well-suited to you. The problem with the Wii interface in general is that, you know, let's say we have, like, I don't know, some kind of, you know, FPS interface, right? And there's all these different parameters you can adjust as far as implementation. You know, so we can say implementation A works with, like, you know, 50% of the population prefers that and can perform a lot better with that. And implementation B, the other 50% is a lot more comfortable with playing, right? The problem is that you can't really have a middle ground that satisfies everybody, right?
Yeah.
So what they end up trying to do, and this works with, like, all kinds of, you know, this is a real design problem on the Wii. You know, when I went to GDC, they were talking about this, how they were, like, in one of the that Marvel game where you have to do the motions to, what's that Marvel game called?
I have no idea.
Okay, so we'll
Fantastic
just...
Four?
No.
Because that game's bad.
No, it was like kind of like the isometric top view one, and it was adapted for the Wii, so you could do all these different motions. And they found out, like, you know what? People hold the Wii controller in very, very different ways. And when they think that they're doing the same motion, that's just some arbitrary motion, call it motion A, you know, people will actually do an incredibly wide range of different motions when they all think it's the same motion,
mm-hmm.
right? And so in order to kind of, like, you know, make it work with everybody, you have to, I mean, it's like a slider, right? You can't make this the setting on the slider as wide as the whole slider, right? You have to either make it better for some people and worse for other people. And so it's kind of like, you can't get everyone, and it's really disappointing. So I don't understand, you know, I think they can kind of fix this with adding some kind of customization things. You know, I know it's a very kind of like expert user, kind of like gamer freak type of feature to have that most, you know, most people probably wouldn't bother with. But mm-hmm. even still, I mean, I think that that would help.
Well, I know like Brawl gives you the option of using the Wii Remote, the GameCube controller, or the Virtual Console controller. So it's like somebody is going, well, we should give these people options because the Wii control isn't that great. I don't know.
Yeah, well, the Geometry Wars Galaxy, by the way, is going to let you use the classic controller as well because the Wii remote sucks.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Alon had some trouble playing that on the Wii.
Dude, I gave it more than a fighting chance.
Yep.
And I usually give things less than a fighting chance. you're a bigger
it was
man.
Miserable. The guy kept trying to defend it, and I was like, dude, I'm sorry. I mean, you can defend it, and that's cool. Like, maybe someone did like it, but they're horrible. And
yep, that was funny because he's like, oh, well, you should try this level. It's a little different, and you're like, no, this is still bad.
Yeah.
He's always have a good time. Oh, try this level.
All right, so we've got a few minutes before the break now, and I know Rich, you had a few more things you wanted to talk about. Tell me about what happened with Gears of War.
Ah, yes. Let me look at my numbers here. Gears of War, a while back, we talked about it on the show, the Hidden Fronts map pack that was like $10, 800 Microsoft points to download, and then it's now free. You know, they said at the beginning they're eventually going to make it free, just like they've done with the Halo 2 maps. But, like, I've never really thought about how much money they make from this. Like, I was looking at the numbers, and they said 500,000 people downloaded the maps for $10. Like, they bought these maps for $10. And that equates, you know, $10 a download. That's $5 million
$5 million.
For four maps. You know, they spend 3 years developing a game, and they, you know, they make their initial sales on that. You know, they've sold 7 million copies worldwide. But on four maps, that's just four small maps is such a small percentage compared to the rest of the game, and they've made an additional $5 million. It's just, it's crazy. And I was looking at the numbers, and it comes out that it was about 12.5% of the people that bought Gears ended up paying for these four maps, which is a good amount of people considering it's a new IP, and, you know, it's the base of 360 owners there are now. So, like, I'm imagining, like, Halo 3, when that comes out, you know, it's an IP that's been around. People are really waiting for this game. And, like, Halo 2 sold 7 million copies in the first year, and I'm sure it'll sell plenty more. Halo 3 will sell more than that you know, if you look at games, typically the next iteration, if it has more hype, is going to sell more. So if you apply, you know, that same, oh, sorry, Gears of War is 4 million. I don't know if I said 7 million.
Yeah, you said 7.
Yeah, Gears of War has sold like 4 million worldwide. So like Halo 3 at, say it sells 7 million and has that same 12.5% of people that will choose to pay for content, which is, you know, kind of the base number I'm going off of, and it's possible that more people will download it. You know, it comes up to $8.75 million for a map pack if they charge $10.
You know what I think is really interesting? That, okay, that $5 million that they made on the map pack?
Yeah.
I heard a rumor, and I don't know if it's true or not, but I heard that Microsoft gets about 30% of that.
I wouldn't doubt it at all.
So this is like big bucks for Microsoft for doing hardly nothing at all.
Well, I mean, it's big
Microsoft's
bucks for the
publisher on that game anyway. So
yeah, they are
a lot more than 30% on that one.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think of like, you know, what does Epic get out of this? You know, what's their cut? Because I know they're making money.
More money to make Gears of War 2?
All right, well,
I don't know. I think they just send girls to Mark Rain and to Lozinski.
Well, there you go. Anyway, we've got one more segment left, so please join us for that. Hang around. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Ara Sharinian.
And my name is Rich.
And we've got Alon.
On the phone.
I tried to throw it in there like it was natural.
Yeah, well, almost. You know, then we bumped into each other.
It happens. Oh, well.
But that's what you get when you're calling in from the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah, I'm in Vegas. I got a plug again, guys. I want a vacation and I want a camera. So head over to our website and put a little link there. And vote for me.
That's right. Our website, chatterboxers.com.
That's right. And another website you can visit is uat.edu, the University of Advancing Technology, where you, too, can learn how to make games. Ara, you are busy making a game right now. Isn't that right?
Oh, I'm very, very busy.
Yeah. Ara, every week is like,
except
dude, I don't have anything
building
to talk about on the show because he's just too busy making the game. And then we come in and we have, like, too many things to talk about. It's crazy.
Yep. All right, if you want to call in, 866-536-1100, we'd love to take your call. Now, we've only got, gosh, like 10 minutes left, right? So let's
do it.
I want to jump in on this topic. Were you going to go into something, Ara? Because there was the one thing that Rich and I ran into this week that I wanted to talk about.
No, go for it. Let's do that.
All right, so we were sitting at my pad,
yes,
as we do from time to time. And Rich was like, listen, I rented Bioshock. I already cleaned through it. You, by the way, should go pick that up from my house, Rich, while I'm here.
I'll do what I can.
So he says, you got to play this. He brings it over. He neglects to bring over the Call of Duty 4 demo.
Whatever.
Or
beta.
Whatever. Beta. But he did bring over Bioshock for me to play. And, I mean, everyone's going on about how good this game is and whatever. It's good enough. But the point is, he brings it over, and I'm busy, like, looking for cars on the internet or something. And so there's a girl that hangs out at my house every so often, and she does not play a lot of video games except maybe Brain Age, right? But essentially no video games. So Rich gives her the controller and watches her, kind of like Miyamoto might watch a new person playing one of his games. And we just sort of
except
let
Rich
her
didn't make the game.
Yeah.
No. But I digress.
And I ridiculed her for it.
Yeah. Well, now Ara did the same thing. He's like, hey, I want you to play the Red Star, and I'll just watch you. They did exactly the same thing.
Yeah, but did I ridicule you?
No. Okay. I read an interview with Iwata today that gave some insight about Miyamoto. It's a good interview. If you guys can find it on the internet, yeah, I think it was linked
like,
to Kotaku.
He says, like, he's not God, but he does have cybernetics. What?
Yeah, something like that. So anyway, so I was comparing you to Miyamoto. Be happy. So anyway, we're watching this girl play, and, I mean, Bioshock to us, what Rich commented on was, like, you sit us down with a game, no matter how complex it is, like, we'll be able to figure it out, and if it's a first-person shooter or something, it's just, it's natural. You move, like, the left stick where you want to move, the right stick where you want to aim, inverted or not inverted is another issue, but, like, we can totally get around the world, and we can understand the world with no problem. And with this person playing who is so remedial, right, it's just uneducated, not used to it, right? Not a problem, but not experienced. And so she's playing this game. The screen's all black. She doesn't realize it's because she might be staring at the floor, right? She doesn't know where to go or how to even consider where you might need to go in the game because having no experience in a game world doesn't know, like, okay, well, there's fire surrounding you at the beginning. Maybe you should just try to explore where there isn't fire.
Oh, yeah. That first sequence was actually rather confusing, even for, you know, seasoned junkies like me, anyway.
I mean, we should be able to figure it out. And, like, with no other option, just explore, right? But she was having such a hard time grasping it. Rich, you had the same sort of impression,
yeah,
right?
She couldn't even figure out how to move through the world. Like, a first-person shooter, I mean, me, I can pick it up and know, okay, it's on 360, I move with the left stick, I look with the right stick, and I know at least that much, and I can move through the world and start to figure things out. Like, she couldn't even figure that out. I was like, no, you got to move with the left stick and then, you know, look with the right one. So she would move and then stop and then turn and look and then move again and then stop and turn another direction and then move that direction. And I was like, you can do it at the same time. And she couldn't grasp, like, the idea of moving through this three-dimensional world the way
I
would.
This is really interesting because this brings up a really, really awesome point, and I'm glad that you guys were able to illustrate this for everybody listening, because there's a lot of assumptions that gamers make about, you know, what it means and what it feels like to play a game, and also what the language, what the grammar of playing a game is. Right? Stuff like this is like second nature to us, right?
Yeah.
But for somebody who hasn't, and it's really like, it's not an intellect issue, it's not a smartness issue, it's simply just not being familiar with the language of video games.
Mm-hmm.
And there's people who don't play video games on a regular basis, there's so many conventions that we're so accustomed to that, you know, even in a game that's like, you know, arguably mass market, like BioShock, you know, a person who doesn't play video games regularly has a lot of trouble just figuring out what's going on.
Yep.
Yeah, and a lot is an understatement. Like, and I'm not trying to fault the person who was playing the game. She just had no exposure. But it's fascinating to realize, like, we think, oh, this game's kind of complex, right? Maybe it's going to be hard to understand what to do. Maybe there isn't enough direction, right?
Right. But here's the thing. Like, this is what I complain about all the time, and I hope that maybe this will give you guys some insight into what I'm talking about when I say, you know, and I'm talking about some game, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, this kind of communication was not strong enough, or like, you know, this message is confusing, and people are like, oh, I figured that out in 2 seconds. You must be a retard. You know, it's not about that. It's about, you know, the certain communications in the game as far as, like, you know, feedback about what you're supposed to do, what you can do, all these things, they have to be communicated in a very, very stark, obvious way that doesn't necessarily detrimentally impact the gaming experience to people who already know what to do. And games that can do that well, these are the games that people really love to play, you know, from all kinds of different, you know, backgrounds and groups and stuff like that.
And you've said that before, and you know what? The greatest example for that, for me, is when I look at the game you made, so, well, had a part in making, right? You look at the Red Star.
Well, you're being like, just too kind now.
Yeah, so you look at this game, and you find a big boss, and it distinctly points out, weak point. And I think putting that on the screen at all is weak sauce. It shouldn't be there, because it takes me away from the game. But at the same time, when you bring it to a beginner, you know, maybe they're going to have no idea what to do with a shooter. And so I
right.
sort of understand it. And it doesn't break you away from the game too much. Mixed feelings about it. It's kind of funny that it says it.
Well, it's a kind of philosophical thing. Like, you know, I'm of the opinion always that, you know, when a player's playing a game, the challenge should be in executing what they're supposed to do. The challenge shouldn't be in trying to figure out what they're supposed to do.
And I agree with that. So that's why I don't have too many complaints about how you perform that function in that game.
All right. Well, it looks like we're coming up on the end of another show. So I want to thank you guys for joining me. Thank you, Alon. Thank
you're
you, Rich. Tough. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll
Thank
see
you,
you next
Ara.
Week.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.